Well, good morning, folks. This is Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. Episode 298, to be exact. I say good morning because that's when I'm recording this intro. This week, guess what? Ben Branham is back. And we had a chance to do an interview together. We haven't had a chance to do this for a while. You know, we did this regularly on my show for a while, and you know, then Ben went off and started his own podcast and things, and which is good. And he does a great job. I've been listening to his last few episodes. Listen to his show, ModernSelfProtection.com, by Ben Branham, my co-instructor, and we had a chance to get together and talk about malfunctions. We also drifted into some other things too. So I think that you're going to enjoy this. But, you know, when it comes to concealed carry and when it comes to defending yourself, you have to know all facets of your gun. You have to know all facets of how to manipulate your firearm. I mean, that's my opinion. You need to know everything, including malfunctions. And it's kind of interesting because all the years that I've been doing this, really only since about late 2005. So I shouldn't say all these years. It's only been 9 years. You know, a lot of people listen to this show have been doing it a lot longer than me. But I've seen so many malfunctions happen. I've seen my guns jam. Every gun I've ever owned. Even Glocks. Yes, I know, folks. Even Glocks. I've seen them all jam. And I've seen a lot of other people, too, that come to classes and things. Or IDPA matches or USPSA. Wow, do you ever see jams there, too? And some people are really good at clearing them, and some people are not very good at clearing them. So it's very, very important, especially, you know, think about it. What happens if you're in a gunfight and you have a malfunction? I mean, how terrible is it that you're in a gunfight in the first place? Think about that. How bad of a day are you having that you're in a gunfight, okay, and you have to save your life? That's bad. That's really bad. But how much worse is it when you have a malfunction and you can't clear it? Think about that. Now, I think the key to malfunctions, first of all, is preventing them. So prevention is the key. Malfunctions. How do you do that? Well, Ben and I talk a little bit about that in this episode. But I'm going to say, you know, you need to understand what causes malfunctions before you can prevent them. You know, have good, clean magazines all the time. Good clean magazines with good springs in them. Use quality ammunition when you're carrying. Okay, if you want to use the junky cheap ammo, or if you want to use reloads that you've, you know, done a lot of cost cutting on your reloads so you can save money and go practice a lot, that's good. That's a good thing. You can go practice a lot because you manufactured a lot of your own real expensive ammo. Don't carry that stuff. Those are some of the ways that you can prevent malfunctions. Make sure your firearm is lubricated properly. And by the way, you're going to hear Ben and I talk a little bit about lubrication. We also find that most malfunctions are user error. So how do you prevent malfunctions? Learn how to really use and run your gun effectively. And it doesn't matter whether you have a pistol, rifle, shotgun, whatever. You know, training. Learning how to run your gun will also prevent some malfunctions. Not all, but some. I mean, you know, people limp wrist their gun because, you know, they're not just real quite sure how to handle their gun. And that, with semi-automatics, with a lot of them, especially Glocks. Glocks are very susceptible to limp wristing. In other words, for people who are new, if you don't have a really good solid grip on that gun, if you don't have a lot of meatier hand on that grip, and you're not holding it properly, you could limp wrist it and cause a malfunction. So think about all that stuff, and let's just take a quick break here, and we'll bring Ben Branham on to talk about the subject. Stay tuned.
An exciting training opportunity is coming to Sioux Falls on May 16th and 17th, 2015, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. This 16-hour course is designed for the concealed carrier who is slightly more advanced but has never had any formal training outside of the CCW course. We start with the basics of handgun safety and marksmanship and quickly progress to some basic dynamic movement and defensive scenarios. Some scenarios would include shooting from cover and proper use of cover, shooting on the move, shooting steel on the move, defending hallways, one-handed shooting, the art of making hits quickly out of the holster, shooting a hostage taker, and more. You will shoot a minimum of 500 rounds of ammunition. Bring a quality handgun with at least 3 magazines, holster, belt, and magazine pouches. Revolvers and .22 caliber pistols are welcome. Both Bob and Ben are NRA certified pistol instructors and have been for several years. Bob has been the host of the Handgun World podcast for 4 years and has over 120 hours of training under his belt. Ben has several years of Marine combat experience and several years of carrying a gun as an armored car driver. This class will be held in Sioux Falls, May 16th and 17th, 2015, from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. both days. Cost is $350 per person, or sign up by December 31st and save $50. Look for the training link at handgunworld.com.
Okay, well, joining me again, it's been a long time since I've had Ben on the show, but Ben Branham, welcome back.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. It's great. I'm glad to be back. I miss being on this show.
Thank you. We're going to talk a little bit about malfunctions today from the Houston class that you taught recently that, unfortunately, I didn't get to be there for, but before we get into that, you know, I just want people to know that I'm doing okay, and I think I'm like about 9 or 10 days away from the brain surgery I had. I've got a whole lot more very, very intense cancer treatments coming up, so I just want to tell everybody that if I'm kind of quiet for a while, you'll know why. And I think everybody, if you haven't been following me on Facebook and Twitter, you probably didn't know, but now you know. So Ben, on malfunctions in the class, tell us what you saw.
Everything breaks, everything malfunctions. I don't care what kind of gun you think you have or you thought you have, Glock, car, I'm trying to think, everything in the course, we had something, XD, XDM, cars, I can't even remember all the guns that we had, but everything, the CZs, every type of gun we had out there. Not every single gun, but every single type of gun we had out there had at least one malfunction.
Why do you think that is?
Well, that course is a lot of sand out there. So first of all, if you have stainless steel magazines and sand, they don't get along at all. So the cars, I think that's why they malfunctioned. The XDs, M&Ps. I know that's why they malfunctioned. And no, the M&Ps didn't have a problem with that. They had other problems.
Okay.
I was really impressed. Like, I had one of the Smith & Wesson SDs, the $300 price point gun. That thing ran like a champ, except for it had those stainless steel polished magazines. And we had to stop at lunchtime and clean out one of his mags. I don't know why it was. The other ones didn't have a problem, but that one, for some reason, I don't know, felt nosed into the sand or something. So if you have XDs, XDMs, cars, that Smith & Wesson SD, anything that has a stainless steel polished magazine, it doesn't like sand at all. So you're going to have to pay attention to that. It's not a big deal, but hey, if you guys run like your XD in a competition, and then you're going to put that same magazine into your rotation to carry, after the competition, when you drop it on the ground 3 or 4 times, you might want to pull it apart, wipe it down, and just put it back together. No oil in your magazines, just a rag, wipe them out. And just take it apart, wipe it down, put it back together. That's it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're covering this, because I've read so much and heard people say so many things like, I've got such and such a gun, and it never malfunctions. Well, you know, people know I've been a Glock fan for years, and I still am, although, Ben, you almost got me converted to M&Ps. But the thing is everything malfunctions sooner or later if you shoot it enough. The problem is, I think a lot of people don't shoot it enough. And when you come to one of our classes, either Beyond Concealed Carry or Pistol Fighting Dynamics, or if you go to a Suarez class or any other class, or even a Mag 40 class, I've seen malfunctions there when I've been to Mag 40. You're going to shoot your gun enough, and you're going to push it to the limits, and you're going to see what malfunctions can occur, if any. And I think the reason this is important, is because, why do we carry guns? We carry guns to save our life, because we can't carry a cop, right? Ha, ha, ha. But we carry them to save our life. Wow, what if you pull that thing and you got a malfunction? Now, unless you don't know, if you have to be able to deal with it, but you need to know what the limits of your gun are. Would you agree?
Yeah, 90% of that. I'm kind of mean when it comes down. There's very few things that you guys know me that I don't say you should do. This one, I'm definitely going to say, if you haven't had a malfunction in your gun, you're not running your gun hard enough, or you're not pushing yourself hard enough. Most malfunctions are user-induced, And if you haven't had a malfunction, just not running your gun hard enough. I mean, when you're trying to learn how to shoot from the hip, ultra short. I mean, when I first got my M&P and I'm trying to run those drills off of my hip because of the super CQB touching the target when I'm shooting it, I had some malfunction because it was winter and I got the big coat on. Well, the slide doesn't agree with coat inside of it when it's functioning. So you're not running yourself or your gun hard enough to get those kind of malfunctions. Sooner or later, it's going to happen when you run the gun hard enough and you run yourself hard enough. So if you haven't had one, go train more. Go train harder.
Yeah, Ben, you said something interesting. You haven't run yourself hard enough. See, when you come to classes like ours, or even if you just go to a simple IDPA match or USPSA match, you're going to run yourself real hard. Well, think about that. If your life is in danger, bad guy wants to kill you or a family member, well, you've been there, done that, Ben. You're going to be pretty stressed out, aren't you?
And you're going to be pushing yourself faster and harder than you thought you would. You're going to do stuff that you probably shouldn't because, you know, you get that freak out mode. So that's why if you push yourself and that malfunction happens, I mean, in combat, I had a malfunction. I knew what I was doing to clear it, but I should have been going tap rack, roll the right, you know, back into the fight. And I wasn't saying my ditty. I'm cussing so loud. My combat buddy next to me is looking at his rifle thinking that he has a malfunction because I'm screaming so loud at my rifle. So you never know what's going to happen. You know, I got the rifle going and it wasn't that big a deal because I had 12 Marines supporting me that were shooting too. If it's only you, there's nobody else to pick up the slack. You better figure it out.
Well, and, you know, rifle, pistol, doesn't matter. You got to figure it out. You got to work out that malfunction. So you saw everything hiccup. What kinds of malfunctions did you see?
Magazine problems all over the place. We already talked about the stainless steel magazines. One guy had one of the beautiful new CZ Rammies, and then another guy had one too, and beautiful little guns. Shoot like a charm, beautiful triggers. CZ is, you know, the perfect ergonomics. It's a really great gun. Somehow he got a bad magazine, and by lunch we figured out he had a bad magazine because that thing would double feed on that magazine left and right. And I don't know what's wrong with the magazine, but hey, I'll give you the same advice if you have one of those magazines that I use, is you're either going to paint that one bright green, use it for training only so you get all those malfunction practice, or you know what I do is I take them and I step on them so they don't fit in my gun anymore. I don't have that problem. You know, and he's like, well, I'm like, dude, just go step on it. So you don't mix it up. And he goes, no, it's a $50 magazine. I want to try to figure out what's wrong with it. You may or may not figure out what's wrong with it. Yes, it's $50, yes. But when your life's on the line, don't worry about that $50. Literally step on that magazine, go get another one, even if it's $50, and then test that one, make sure it works. And then for magazines, too, I know Bob does this, and I do this, too, is I separate the ones that I use for my carry and the ones that I train with. And my carry ones, it goes kind of like I buy new magazines, and then I go test them, and then those be carrying my carry ones. And that carry one gets downmoded. Or demoted to my gets demoted to my training mag, and then when the training mags go bad, you know, I smash that. I go get another brand new one, and it keeps swapping them out. And that's how I swap out mags, and that's how I keep them going.
Yeah, I do not train or compete with the same magazines. I do test the magazines that I carry. I'll test them, make sure, you know. I'll run 3 or 4 full magazines of ammo through my carry magazines, and then they're dedicated as concealed carry self-defense magazines. And I would strongly suggest other people do the same.
And you might want to, you guys are thinking, why am I talking about magazines so much? Because your autoloader, that is 90% of the problem, is going to be a bad magazine. It's either you, the shooter, 90% of all malfunctions are shooter induced, 10% are the gun's fault. Of the gun's fault, 90% of those are the magazine.
What about ammo?
So ammo would be like 1%, and then you've got a couple other little things that can break on your gun. So most of it is going to be your magazine issue. I mean, you could get some really bad ammo with hard primers or half charges, but if you're using factory ammo, I don't see problems with that. It's always the guy's reloads that have problems with them.
Now, I might take a little bit of a disagreement with regards to 1911s. Because it's happened to me.
Many 1911s, especially some of the shorter ones, it could be a recoil spring issue.
Recoil spring, yep.
So I've had malfunctions due to recoil spring. Let me tell you what, once I change out the recoil spring and use good quality magazines, it ran like a champ.
Well, and then, you know, I used to carry 1911s. When I carried a short 1911 as one of my duty weapons, every 6 months I just changed out the spring. Didn't matter. I bought them at two or three at a time, and every 6 months, you know, the first of the year and around July, my gun got a new magazine, a new recoil spring. It's just the way it was, because my gun would go about 500-600 rounds, and then it would start choking. And then as soon as you dropped a new magazine spring or new spring in there, no problem. So if you're going to those high round count classes and you guys are running those 1911s, those short ones, it's probably one of those parts that you want to have in your shooting bag. So if your gun starts hiccuping, you can pull it apart, wipe it down, and put one a new spring in there and get it running again. Because it just stinks if you're just at. And this happened to some of the guys at the class, especially the guy that was running that bad magazine. He kept trying to figure it out and trying to. So half of the time that he's on the line to shoot, he's running a malfunction drill. He's trying to fix his malfunction. And if you look at the average gunfight and we go 3 seconds, that's a long time to be fiddling with your gun when you should be shooting. So figure out how to do a malfunction change or a malfunction drill. What else? I saw a really oddball malfunction at the class, and it was a guy's 45 car, one of those CW 45s. Great little guns, man. Those are a dream to shoot and to carry and everything else. But he had a weird one. I don't know what happened, but somehow, and cars do this, their top round of the magazine will take a nosedive on you. Mm-hmm. So it goes nose down. Well, his went halfway nose down. He shoved it into the gun, tried to run the malfunction drill. The thing wouldn't run. Couldn't get the slide to lock back, and he couldn't get that magazine out. He was using one of the flush fit magazines. Would not come out. We ended up, I had to stop the line, and it was night too. It was already dark. So we were probably 500 rounds through that little gun into it. And he hadn't even broken in yet. He bought it brand new, brought it to the course. That little gun was just like, that was it. It's like, I'm done. You need to clean me. You need to take care of me. Whatever. I'm done.
Wait a second. Brand new gun. He had never run it, and he brought it to the course. Bad idea.
Well, it ran flawlessly until that point.
Yeah, but I don't suggest doing that. Test your guns before you go train with them.
So it took us three hands to get that gun to unlock. He had to hold it and hold the slide back, and I had to take my cool Tactical pen, my steel pen, and slam it down inside the magazine well to get that magazine to pop out.
Okay.
And as soon as he did, he pulled it all out. The rounds came out. He put another magazine in the gun, and it ran fine. So magazine issue, loading issue, I don't know what the issue was, but that gun was very, very upset with whatever he did to it.
You finally got it worked out, though?
Yeah. As soon as we got that magazine out, he got another magazine in there, and the gun ran just fine.
Okay. So that definitely was a magazine issue on that one.
I don't know.
Oh.
Honestly, because the round took a nosedive was the problem.
Yeah.
It didn't go straight down. It just went straight across instead of up and into the feed ramp and up into the chamber, and it just locked up the gun. It was high enough to lock the magazine in place so it wouldn't come out. Because if that bullet comes partially out of your magazine and into that chamber, it's being held by the magazine lips and by the gun itself, so the magazine won't come out.
Yeah, my two car arms pistols are 9mm, and I have had one nosedive issue with the top round. That was it. But I'll tell you what, regarding car pistols, there's a couple things I'll say about that, because I'm a big fan of them. Break those suckers in. You got to break them in. They run a lot better. I never use the flush-fitting magazines on those unless I want to pocket carry the gun. I use the magazines with the extension because they're so much easier to rip out to clear a malfunction. That's the thing, and people got to realize when you are carrying a gun, if you're using flush-fitting magazines, it's nice, because you get to conceal it better, but consider a malfunction. They're a lot harder to clear that malfunction when you're using a flush-fitting magazine.
Yeah, and if it's your primary gun, too. I've been coming, the more I teach these classes and the more I see these catastrophic problems that take tools, an extra person, pull the gun apart. Well, that malfunction, even if he had gotten that magazine out, finished, you know, clear the chamber and put that magazine back in and tried to run the gun, if he didn't have another magazine, he'd been screwed too, because that magazine, he had to pop all the bullets out and kind of play with it to get that top round to come out and pull them all out and put them back in before he could use that magazine again. So you might want to carry an extra magazine. That's a long time to get that magazine out. More and more, I'm becoming a big fan of carrying a second gun. And if that first one goes down, draw that second one, even if it's just your pocket pistol. If you're carrying you know, a Glock 19 is your primary gun, and you're carrying a little J-frame pocket gun or the little car PM9 or even the car 380, something really small, LC, anything like that, it's way faster to do that New York reload than to try to make that malfunction drill work. And trust me, I'm good with a malfunction drill, but a tap rack, roll to the right, that's a two-second drill. It's a second and a half to get that new gun out and on going. So,
and speaking of second gun, this is just my preference. You know, I'm a right-hander, so I carry most of the time on my right side over my appendix, or if I carry behind the hip, it's the right side. I carry my backup gun, a little pocket 380, car P380, or my Glock 42, on the left-hand side in my pocket. Or it'll be inside the waistband on the left-hand side. Reason I carry my spare on the left, and I practice with it, by the way, you know, you draw, you're supposed to practice and draw, is because if my right hand's taken out of the fight, but my spare gun's on the right side, I'm kind of in trouble, aren't I?
Yeah, that's a good thought. I generally carry my full-size M&P behind my right hip, and then I carry appendix, my little revolver. And I can get to that left-handed, but it's not as fast. I'm actually thinking about moving that over to my left side appendix.
Yes.
Which isn't really your appendix, but in that same spot, so I start drawing that thing left-handed. And
Practice that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Practice. The other thing you need to, and this is from training myself when I work for the Armored Car Company, I carry two 1911s, one on each side, one in a tactical drop holster, and then the other one high above my hip on the left. And no matter, I always thought that I would draw that second gun. I'd have my first gun in my hand, and it would go down, and I would hold that gun, and then pull with my left hand and draw that, just that left-handed gun, and I'm holding both guns, you know, so I don't lose it. Every time I put myself under pressure, every time I practice that for, you know, towards reel or time or anything else or moving, I drop that first gun every single time. Mm-hmm. So that might be a thought of yours when you're in a real fight. If you put it on your left-hand side or your right-hand side, my experience is that you're going to drop that primary gun and go to that second gun. And you just got to know that going into your mess. So, you know, whatever. If the gun's broken and you drop it, it doesn't help anybody else. It's not helping anybody at all, so it doesn't matter. But if it's just a malfunction or if it's out of ammo, you know, something to think about. There's not a good answer there.
I can hear the people right now listening to this interview. I'm not going to drop my $2,000 gun in practice to be able to draw my backup gun.
You know, that's what I said about, because I was carrying my custom para ordnance, and it was, by the time I got done with it, it was a $2,000 1911, and I never intended to drop it. And my intention was to run dry on my primary 1911, hold that one, and go to my second. Well, every time I put myself under pressure, I started moving, doing anything else besides thinking about it, I dropped that gun. And the first time I did it and I ran down the range, it was like one round and I went, oh my gosh, I dropped my gun. run out of the backup gun and I'm like, okay, I got to stop, holster the backup gun and go pick up my baby and dust it off and stuff. But yeah, it was just, I tried to train myself out of it and I couldn't. Anytime I put myself under pressure, I dropped that primary and went to the secondary. It was gone. So that's why I'm just saying that, be aware of that. There's not a good answer, but personally, I don't know. There's other things that people can do that I can't do, but I could not train, because I worked for years trying to train that out of me, and I just never did. And I always wanted to train it out of me because I thought, you know, in a gunfight, it's probably a bad idea to leave a gun on the ground somewhere, right? Yeah. Somebody's trying to kill you. It just seems counterintuitive, right? But at that point,
if you're going to your backup gun, it's kill or be killed. It's on. I mean, you know, I would assume that you're going to drop your primary gun because it's probably out of ammo or severely malfunctioned.
Yeah, but I mean, just if you think about it intuitively, I have a gun in my hand and I'm going to drop it and leave it for somebody else to pick up when there's people trying to kill me out there. It just seems wrong. That's why I was trying to train myself out of it. And I just never could. So something to be aware of.
We're going to get back to malfunctions here in a minute, but I want to say something about that. You know, again, as I always say, let's hope this day never comes. But what if you're defending yourself and the bad guy shoots your gun out of your primary hand, or kicks the gun out of your primary hand, or wrestles your strong hand back behind your back? You know, those are all reasons you could lose the ability to use your primary carry weapon. Therefore, you got to go to your backup.
Yeah, and shooting it out of your hand, you think that's weird, but that really happens more times than you would think of. And I'm sorry, your rifle, your Glock, whatever you're carrying, put it on the range and shoot it and see how well it runs after it's taken a bullet, even in the side of the slide or the front of the slide or something. It may or may not work, but I'm going to bet no. I've even seen the AK will malfunction after it takes a round off the receiver. They just don't work after they've been shot. So,
well, speaking of shooting a gun out of shooting your primary gun out of your hand, I've taken a force-on-force class. And one thing I never realized, you know, we were using airsoft guns. One thing I never realized in that force-on-force class is how many times I got hit in the hands. I got hit in the hands. And the reason I was getting hit in the hands is because my opponent, guess what he was shooting at? He was shooting at, he saw my gun in my hands. And he focused on that point, and he shot my hands holding the gun. Now, these were airsoft pellets, so I was still able to hold on to my gun. But if they were real bullets, I probably wouldn't have held on to my gun.
Hurts like a son of a gun, doesn't it?
Oh, they hurt. They hurt. So, if it's a real bullet, there goes my primary gun, and now I got to go to my backup gun.
Yeah, I always have a backup plan, and I learned that the hard way with SIM munitions when I took a round in the hand,
yeah.
And I couldn't make... It was my foregrip on my rifle, and that's where I had my light on there. I had a pressure switch, I was squeezing, and we're running around a building at night, and I took a round in the hand right there up close, and I thought I broke my hand, but I was a big bad Marine, so I wasn't going to say anything or stop the drill, and it was a 15-minute exercise battle, but for 15 minutes, I couldn't move my left hand, like the whole battle. It wasn't until about an hour later that I could move my hand enough to make that pressure switch work again, so that's...
Yeah.
That's a thought. If you get your hand out there and you get shot, it could happen. So
you got to know how to deal with it. All right. Anything more on
malfunctions?
Yeah. Anything more on malfunctions from the class?
Besides everything malfunctioned, there was only a couple oddball ones like that, and nothing ran perfect. Even one of the guys was at like 3/4 of the way through the day. I'm like, look, everything's malfunctioning. You guys might want to take note of that. The guy stands up and goes, my Glock never malfunctions. I was like, well, yours, and everybody's like, no, mine hasn't yet. Everybody said my Glock hasn't malfunctioned. And then, like, the two shooters later, the guy steps up with the Glock, and it malfunctioned. It was user error, but it was still the Glock malfunctioned. It was kind of funny. Murphy's Law, that's when I get malfunctions, too, is when I stand up there and start talking crap about my gun never malfunctioning. And then I step up to the line, and I have my gun just goes, bleh. So, keep your mouth shut on the malfunctions, because it's going to happen to you sooner or later. So you got to learn how to do it. Learn how to do it fast. Practice it. I mean, you guys, here's the easiest way. You want to learn how to do a malfunction, tap rack, roll the right, and, do it instantaneously all the time? Dry fire. You got to dry fire, right? If you're dry firing with your Glock or your M&P or anything that has to have the hammer reset, what do? You pull the slide halfway back and let it go? Well, stop it. When that gun goes click, slap the bottom of the magazine, even if it's not there because you're using an unloaded gun. Roll that gun to the right and run that slide hard. Not like a little girl, like hard, like there's some crap in
there. Like you mean it. Like you mean it.
Sorry, ladies out there. I know a lot of you guys probably run the gun better than we do. But run it hard and fast. All the way back, let it rip out of your hands and go forward, and then take your next shot. If you do that, that's how I got to the point where I don't even think about malfunction. Tap rack, roll the right. It happens because every time that gun goes click when I think it should go bang, I'm programming myself to go tap rack, roll the right.
And by the way, I'm going to go ahead and shamelessly put this in there. Ben and I demonstrate all of this on the Shooters Club. So if you're not a member of our Shooters Club, our paid site, to where you can access tons of videos that we've done, you can watch this and you can see how it's done, and then you can practice it at home. All you got to do is go to shootersclubmembers.com or either one of our websites. There's a sign-up link, and you can get signed up today. So I urge you to do that. All right, malfunctions, anything else?
And on reality, I would tell you how to do it over the radio, but it doesn't really work. You need to see you need to really see it, so that's why it's on video. Not that I'm trying to hold information back to you. I could explain it for the next half hour and you wouldn't get it. And when I show it to you on video, you'd be like, aha, light goes on.
Didn't we do a rifle malfunction video too?
I'm pretty sure we did.
Yeah, I think we did it I think you did it with an AR-15 also.
And the rifle malfunctions are a lot like the pistol malfunctions. I'm for commonality of training. But yeah, once you see it on the video, it's really easy, and that's why we're not going over on the podcast. Just besides everything malfunctions. The other thing you're going to have is ammo problems. You talked about that a little bit, and gun problems. We didn't have a broken gun at the class, but it happens. we have all sorts of ammo problems. Remember when we were in Washington, the guy had oversized reloads that wouldn't fit in the custom barrel that he dropped in his Glock, and it kept... And in the morning, that thing ran fine.
Wait a minute. Whoa. Custom barrel in his Glock. Most of the time, the Glocks fail when you start to get rid of factory parts and put in custom stuff.
Well, he was tinkering with it. That was Dad's special toy that he gave his son to play with. It was a Glock 22 with a 9mm Lone Wolf barrel in it. And, you know, he had all the bells and whistles. He was running a light on it. It was a really cool-looking gun.
You know me. Unless you're in competition, keep your Glocks in stock configuration if you're going to carry them, please.
Well, anyways, it ran fine for half of the day, and then as soon as that thing got a little bit dirty after we got like 100 rounds through it, that thing kept choking.
It's a fun gun. I wouldn't carry a gun like that because it's too, you know, it's got too many aftermarket stuff on it and things like that. But anyway, personal opinion, send me hate mail if you want.
Well, there you go. There's our experience, though, shining through. Is when I see a bone stock Glock, they rarely break and they rarely malfunction. When you start adding stuff like that aftermarket barrel, that thing would not run to save that poor kid's life, and I felt bad for him. I kept clearing it, and finally, I had to go back and get my backup gun. I gave him my Glock 19 and dropped it in his holster and let him run that gun so that he could keep up with the class, because just every time. And it was funny, too. He was kind of, and I say kid, he was like 20, 21. Him and his dad were there. Really, really nice people. But he was kind of afraid to clear that malfunction, because when it locks up, you got to beat it open.
Yes.
So you hold the slide with your left hand, and then you sit there either with your hammer fist or your open palm, and you smack the butt of the gun until that slide moves.
Yeah. By the way, I want to talk to all you revolver shooters out there. You're probably sitting back thinking, ha-ha, listen to Bob and Ben. This is funny stuff. I don't have to worry about this because I shoot a revolver. Not. I've seen revolvers malfunction as well.
How many of you shoot little tiny super lightweight revolvers with big 150-grain bullets? Or even your 38 Special with 158-grain plus P round? What happens? You get worse malfunctions. You're just screwed. You need a second gun. If you guys don't know what happens when you get those big bullets and that recoil of the little tiny lightweight gun, you know, the bullet is only held in that cartridge case by friction. And when you're running the heavier bullets, what are heavier bullets? They're longer. So what happens is when you get under recoil, the gun moves sharply to the rear, that bullet kind of stays in place, and the cartridge is held by the gun, so it moves back, and the bullet kind of stays. So what you get is the overall length of the cartridge is, every time you shoot the gun, is getting a little bit longer, and a little bit longer, and a little bit longer. Well, it's just a hair, but when you get those guns as small as they can be, what do? They shorten that cylinder, too, to make the gun smaller and lighter. Well, as soon as that bullet sticks out just a hair past the end of that cylinder no longer rotates.
That's right.
And the gun is locked up. Generally, you're done. You're going to need a hammer or a bat or something to get that thing open. And then that round is junk. So
yeah, when revolvers jam, boy, they jam. And it's tough to clear it.
You gotta carry a second gun. If you're going to carry a little lightweight revolver and that's all you're going to carry, you probably want a second gun.
That's another one of those myths that revolvers never jam. They do. Albeit maybe a lot less than semi-autos, but they do have issues.
When they have issues, they have issues. If it's an ammo issue, that's the nice thing about the revolver. When it has an ammo issue, it goes click. You just pull the trigger again. You don't even have to think about anything or do anything. It works great. But, yeah, there's all sorts of nasty things. And if you ever open up your revolver, even of a Ruger, it's one of the most bulletproof internals you'll find. But if you ever pull that side plate and look at the lock mechanism in there, it looks more like a Swiss watch than a gun inside. So you got all those little gears and levers and all that little stuff. Yes, yeah. I know those are really technical terms, but if you pull out the side panel or Google an image, look up an image with that side plate removed on one of those revolvers, and look at how intricate it is in there.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like a clock.
Yeah, yeah. All right, something else I could think of to talk about, but do you have anything more you want to say about malfunctions?
Besides practice, no. Please, we actually, Bob and I talked about it, and I took stuff out of our BCC class to put malfunctions in there because we've had so much problems with them lately. I don't know what's going on lately because we taught a bunch of BCC classes and had like one or two malfunctions out of 20 students all day. And I would just sit there and talk them through the malfunction drill. It wasn't that big a deal. But now lately, our last three classes, been nothing but jam-o-matics on the range.
Yeah.
So clean and lube your gun. Don't believe the super duper lube. Don't use a lot of lube. depending on your environment, you guys in Louisiana, or if you live in Japan or something where it's super, super, or Florida, where all you're dripping sweat and dripping humidity all the time, you might now use a little bit more lube. But the drier the environment, the less lube you need, and just get a little bit on there. If it changes color, you got enough lube.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because and this has been a problem of mine. I've been guilty of this. Most of today's good polymer service pistols, the Glocks, the M&Ps, the XDs, the Tauruses, the SIGs. No, I don't think SIG makes a polymer pistol. No, they make one that's... No, they don't.
They make two of them now.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Three of them, I'm sorry. They make three polymer pistols.
Okay, I stand corrected. Where I was going with that is they're pretty reliable and don't require a lot of lubrication. I used to over-lube these polymer pistols. I don't anymore. You don't lube a polymer pistol like you lube a 1911. And I used to be kind of guilty of that. And so be careful of that, too, because I think since we're talking about malfunctions, some of them might have to do with over-lubrication, don't you think?
Yeah, and that's to me, that's a user error. That's an operator malfunction induced right there. If you didn't lube or clean your gun correctly, you got to do it. And you got to find those test points and those break points. I know one instructor that he cleans his gun every Friday without fail. He is that paranoid. I am completely on the opposite side. I have cleaned way too many guns in the Marine Corps. I am done cleaning just about. And I'm testing a bunch of lubes. Right now, my M&P that I carry every day needs to be cleaned because I got like 1,100 rounds through it. I'm testing some new CLP. But I'm about done because that last class, I was worried it was going to malfunction on the line because it was cycling a little bit slow. And that's the other thing is, as you guys, I'm a big fan. I'm a one-gun man. My M&P is my everything. That's it. It's all I have. That's all I carry. That's all you ever catch me with, really. And so I can feel when the gun is starting to just a little bit slow, and that's a sign that it's going to malfunction soon. It needs to be taken apart, wiped down, cleaned up. It just needs a little love.
Yeah, you know, but getting back to this, you know, the lube stuff, just here's what I find. I find with my Glocks and M&Ps, they only need 4 or 5 drops of lubrication. That's it. Drops. And not very often either. They're built that way. Now, my 1911s are a different story, but just try to stay away from the over-lubrication, I think.
I even do 4 drops on my 1911s. Yeah, everybody over-lubricates everything. Everything I've found is like... And I call it a fallacy. Here's where it comes from, and I'm going to piss off a lot of people, because if you go ARs, there's two sides. You either run them so wet that it's spitting at you, or so dry that there's hardly any lube. Run it so dry there's hardly any lube. Why do we do that? Because the lube attracts dirt. It's wet. It attracts everything. It attracts that powder that's burning that's going through your gun, and you don't think the powder's going through your gun? BS. That, you know, your Glock is running at like 25,000 PSI in there. That stuff is spraying everywhere inside of your gun. I got news for you. It ain't as tight as it should be. And that lube attracts that gunk. And as that gunk builds up, it slows down those internal parts. It messes with that malfunction. And that's one of the reasons the 1911 will malfunction more than Glock. Glock has only got those little 4 points that hold onto that slide rail. Well, if there's some dirt in there, there's a lot of room for that stuff to move. With your 1911, you got almost a full rail on one side and 2 big, huge pieces of rail on the other side. You get some dirt in there, it doesn't have as much room to move back and forth. And if you get dirt in between 2 moving parts, what's going to happen? It slows them down. What happens when you slow down the slide speed on your gun? You get a malfunction. So the big fallacy is that when your gun starts to malfunction, if I just take a spray lube bottle and I spray a bunch of lube in there, yeah, well, what's it act like? It really acts like a solvent, and it washes some of that dirt away, and it replaces it with a lube, so your gun will start running again. And then it'll start slowing down, attracting dirt, and it starts to dry up a little bit, and boom, it'll start malfunctioning again. Well, if you take a bunch of lube and you spray it in there, your gun will start working again. So if you're at a class and your gun just starts malfunctioning and you don't have time to clean it up or anything, if you just take some lube and spray some lube on it, you know, everywhere that it moves, your gun will start magically running again. So that's where that thing comes with, oh, you got to run them really, really wet. They're starting to dry out. No, they'll run wet, yeah, but then they attract all that dirt and it'll make them malfunction faster. So that's where you get those two sides fighting over, we should be running the guns really wet or really dry, and that's That's been my opinion. And in the Marine Corps, we used to, I wanted to smack the crap out of people. We'd get on the line and we'd shoot all day, and then we're going to go to do our test. And if you have a malfunction, you get an alibi, so nobody cares. You get to shoot again. That's what an alibi means. But then the instructor would stand there. Okay, everybody, lock open your bolt to the rear. And he'd come by with a spray bottle, 409 spray bottle that had lube in it, and he'd spray inside everybody's actions. And I'd be like, nope, you don't need to touch my dang gun. Go away.
Just to keep it running. You know, since you brought that up, there's I have quite a few new listeners to this show. They email me occasionally and say, hey, I just started listening to your show. So for the benefit of the new listeners, Ben, talk a little bit about your Marine Corps experience and your armored car experience and things like that so that they know where you're coming from.
Well, I spent 10 years in the Marine Corps Reserve with a combat tour and a couple other tours, and did that. Went to a bunch of cool classes for the Marine Corps. That was fun. Thank you, taxpayers. You guys actually sent me to a $10,000 urban warfare course that I learned a crap load of stuff that I actually teach in my courses now. But it's like $10,000 for the week.
Nice.
So thank you, taxpayers. I appreciate that. You taught me a lot. So I got to go a bunch of cool stuff there. And then I became an armored car guard. I did that for about 7 years. Five of it was in Long Beach and L.A. area. So I got to see a bunch of gangbangers. A couple attempts at a robbery. Nobody ever shot at me. Generally, when I pointed my gun at them, they ran away. So that works really, really well. At least it worked for me. I point my gun at him, he runs away. I'm good with that, right?
Yes, you should be.
So, I was staked out a couple times, and that's where I really got good at awareness doing that job. I got to the point where I could see what people were thinking. I could walk by somebody, and he's sizing me up. I could see him thinking about, could I take this guy? How much money does he really have? Is it worth it? I could see the wheels turning in his mind. And I'd walk by people and be like, don't even think about it. I'll kill you. Like, you know, if you just saw me walk by and tell somebody that, you'd be like freaking out. But I could see him sizing me up, thinking about it. And especially like three gangbangers standing out front of the place that are just looking to do, you know, they're standing there because they're looking to victimize somebody. And I'm walking by. So they're sizing me up to see,
what's this guy going to do?
How much money does this guy have?
Yeah. And,
you know, he's a big guy, but, you know, there's three of us. You know, they're always thinking about that. And
now, while you were serving us overseas in the military, you were in a few gunfights, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. That's Bob's favorite thing. I was actually in the infantry, so I wasn't just in the Marine Corps. And I went tip of the spear the whole nine yards in 2003. I got to step places that no American has stepped before in Iraq. So that was kind of interesting. And I was in a total of 11 gunfights. I had to fire my personal weapon 9 times. The other 2 times I was directing my Marines because I was a corporal at the time, so I was a leader of Marines, not just a window licker or a bullet catcher. I was actually had to tell people what to do. So that was fun, running across Baghdad, and then I was part of a mortar team. So there was actually 15 of us, and that's interesting. So I got to do small unit tactics because we would be going along with the rest of the company, about 150 Marines, 180 with our reinforced was probably about our strength. And we'd stop and going into the attack, okay, the whole thing would stop and be like, hey, mortars, get out here. And we're like 2 miles from the objective. And so then everybody else would leave and it's like us. So I spent an afternoon in this, I remember this one dump in Baghdad in this Mahalla, scared to death because there's only 10 of us or 15 of us trying to hold a whole square so we can do mortars. And then there's people running through all the time and we're chasing people. It was crazy just sitting there. We're waiting to do fire missions to support the company that's in the attack, taking over a military base, and we are just hanging out there. I got to do all those small unit tactics and stuff, so that was nothing really happened on that one, but that was my biggest pucker factor, like most harrowing moment, because if they had overrun us with strengths that they had in there, we had our support team on the roof, there was 5 guys up there, we had like 15 guys on the guns, I don't care how good you are when there's 20 of you and 100, 200 of them. They tend to win.
You kind of screwed in that situation, aren't you?
Yeah, and the night before, they were pushing out another company of Marines, our sister company. We had to go in and reinforce them that morning because our sister company had been losing all night. Yeah. So they were being pushed back. So it was, that was one of those. And their pushback thing was car bombs and RPGs. So that was fun.
Good, good. And you also do a podcast, so why don't you tell people about it?
Sorry. Yeah. Of course. Come listen to my podcast. I do the Modern Self-Protection podcast. It's at modernselfprotection.com. And you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, all that stuff. But I like to talk, I do talk guns and malfunctions and stuff, just like talking with Bob. A lot of it, I talk about awareness. I just did 10 things that you can test your awareness by, like simple things. You get surprised by people when you walk around a corner. Well, you shouldn't. You should be aware enough to know that, you know, when you walk through a doorway and you meet somebody and do that little dance to try to get around somebody, that means your awareness was not where it should have been. You should have seen that coming. So I did 10 little things like that on how to keep aware. And I like to do a lot of the awareness, a lot of the stuff coming up, a lot of some of the things. I've got one coming up. I haven't done it. I should. About gas station sliders. One of those big things that's been going on in California is when you stop at the gas station and you're pumping gas, a guy will slip into the car next to you, and you get back into your car and there's somebody sitting in the seat next to you. You know, that's kind of a, you know,
That's a good one.
That's pretty big in California, and what happens in California seems to spread to the rest of the country. You know, it kind of works there, and somebody kind of goes, and they pass it in prison and all that other stuff, and whatever works someplace, they're going to try it somewhere else.
Yeah, good. So that's at modernselfprotection.com, and also you can search Modern Self Protection on iTunes.
Yeah, or my name, Ben Branham. Whatever. Come find me. Send me an email. Say hi. I'd love to hear from you guys. If there's something that you want to know about or want to hear about or want to know more information about, if you send me an email at ben@modernselfprotection.com, I generally put them on the podcast.
Good. I want to conclude with this. We just got done having breakfast, and we talked about the year 2015, which I fully intend to be here in 2015 and teach all the classes. That's actually pretty good timing because the treatments I got to go through are probably going to last about the next 4 to 5 months. So it probably lasts into early 2015, and then I plan on coming out of that and start teaching. I got God on my side, and I got the best cancer hospital in the world on my side, and that's my fully intent. My full intention is to win, beat this fight, and get there. So for 2015, we have a lot of cool stuff planned. We're not going to release it right now because we got to, you know, have more details. But there's going to be some advanced classes, some more night classes that we like to teach. And we're going to do some more traveling next year. Some of you already know we've got Sioux Falls, South Dakota on the books. We're going up there to team up with Paul Lathrop in May. Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast. People have already signed up for that. That's going to be good. That's going to be a 2-day event. So tell us a little bit more about the classes, Ben.
Yeah, we're going to travel some more. Hopefully we'll get back to Arkansas. We got to talk to John Hottaway, the big bald guy up there. That was a lot of fun if you took that class. That was awesome. And then hopefully, I'm hoping, here's the one I want to go to. The unnamed trucker is trying to invite us and arrange something for the three of us to do up in Alaska.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to visit Alaska. So, you know, shamelessly, we go where I'd like to visit. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, we are trying to put that together, believe it or not, a trip to Alaska. Like July or August, right?
Yes, I don't do 30 below. I'm sorry, you guys are nuts up there. I got friends up there now, too, and she told me it's not too bad. The high was like 25 yesterday. I'm like, it's still summer, right? Yeah. What the heck? You know? So. I'm
and
like,
since you brought him up, by the way, let me give him a plug. Go listen to the Road Gunner podcast with the unnamed trucker, the best, what does he say? He's got the worst kept secret in Second Amendment radio or something like that. But anyway, we're going to try to team up with him and head up there to the last frontier. They call it the last frontier, don't they? Alaska?
I don't know.
Sure hope I got that right.
Somebody in Alaska let us know, but I'm really excited to try to get to Alaska. It's always been on my bucket list to visit up there. So I might try to take the family and do a couple extra days if I'm going to stay up there. But, you know, hey, sounds like fun to me. And then we're going to try to get back to Washington this year. We're going to do a bunch of stuff in Houston, trying to get at least 2 courses in Houston, a couple in Dallas, 3 or 4 here in San Antonio. We are going to be busy beavers next year. So if you haven't trained with us or you want to keep training with us, keep going to look because we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Be lots of stuff.
And you can check any of our websites. You can either go to handgunworld.com or modernselfprotection.com. You'll see the class listings on there and how to sign up for it and so forth. And I think that's about it. That's it for me. Ben, any last comments?
Just the secret about traveling for handgun courses, firearms courses, right? What's the hard part? It's getting the time off for the family. Take your family with you when you travel someplace. if you get, like, our courses are a one-day course, or you get a two-day course, yeah, that gets kind of, 2 days is kind of long, but it, like, ours is a one-day course. If you come to San Antonio, bring the family, you know, you come in Friday night, you stay at the River Rock, Saturday you come train with us, and then you hang with the family Sunday, Monday, make it a long weekend or something, and that's how you can kind of cheat your travel budget. I'm doing that, and I'm going to Vegas this month to take a course. So.
Oh, cool for you. Yeah. I mean, you know, San Antonio, we're a great destination here. For you new listeners, Ben and I are both, you know, living in San Antonio, Texas. We're a great destination here. Come down here and see the cool sites, hang out, even some of our other traveling courses. You know, we try to book them in interesting places. No offense, Paul, but Sioux Falls, South Dakota, I don't know how many families might want to go up there, although you never know. Maybe I pissed some people off now.
Don't be mean. Who knows what? I don't know what's in Sioux Falls. Maybe there's something cool. I mean, Indian gaming casinos. I think there's one of those, isn't there?
Yeah, maybe. Hey Ben, maybe I might have just cost us some signups with that comment. I don't know.
Well, I wasn't just being shameless plugging our classes, but if you haven't taken a class and you need to get out somewhere, and I know some of you guys don't have any good training next to you, and you need to travel somewhere, take the time, travel somewhere, even if it's a 1 day course. And that's your excuse. Take the family with you, and you get your training in, and you get your vacation.
You know, the problem with Sioux Falls, South Dakota is that they're all Viking fans, and I think there was a team last week that just kicked the snot out of the Minnesota Vikings. Oh, the Green Bay Packers did. Yeah, that's right. I just had to poke Paul Lathrop.
Yeah, one of these days, one of those guys is going to get you. Be careful.
All right, Ben, thanks for joining. It was great. Glad to have you on again. And I think we'll stop here.
Cool. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Go check out the website, handgunworld.com.
80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Diane Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in two other homicides. These two items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, many thanks, Ben Branham. Thanks again for coming on. Well, let's get the show wrapped up, folks. I just want to say a couple things before we leave here. Handgunworld.com is the website. Please don't forget about my Amazon store. A lot of you, thank you, thank the Lord. A lot of you have been purchasing, making your purchases through my Amazon affiliate link at handgunworld.com. If you do that, it helps you support my show. Helps you financially support my show without you having to spend any extra money. So go to handgunworld.com and then find the Amazon store. You might have already done that, bookmark that link or whatever, and do your shopping on Amazon through my Amazon store. I'd appreciate that very much. We mentioned the Shooters Club, so I won't go into that. At handgunworld.com are all of the remaining class listings for the rest of this year. I'm going to try to make it up to the Dallas class November 9th. I'm going to try to do that. That's on our books. Ben and I are teaching pistol fighting dynamics in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I am going through some pretty rough chemotherapy treatments here to beat the cancer that came back. So because of that, I'm not quite sure yet how I'm going to feel. We'll see. But I have my eyes set on trying to make it to the Saturday, November 9th, Dallas class, pistol fighting dynamics up at Quail Creek Range up in Dallas for the remainder of the year. And if all goes well, I think I'll probably be there. So, keep praying for me on that. Okay, let's see. What else was I going to say before signing off? Oh, yeah, the Shooters Club, shootersclubmembers.com. If you would like to learn the material that Ben and I teach but you can't make it to a class, consider signing up for our annual video membership, shootersclub.com. Excuse me, shootersclubmembers.com, or you can find a page at handgunworld.com as well. It's only $75 a year. You can access all the videos that we have for only $75 a year. And we've got a lot of videos out there, a lot of instructional, good quality videos. Or you can do the $8 per month option, and that's on there too. So check it out, shootersclubmembers.com or the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. Oh, I said we covered that, but I went ahead and covered it anyway. All right, folks, that's it. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun. Thanks. If they're back.